Created with free version for non-commercial use.
Hello and welcome. This is Will Rens for Create a Learning Site, the place to go deeper in your understanding of the Bible.
I will not mention any names, modern ones that is. I'm sure you'll be able to fill in the blanks. Originally, I intended to revisit the subject of the atonement, but recent events compel me to postpone that issue and instead look at Old Testament prophecies against nations other than Israel and Judah, and Nahum in particular. I offer my thoughts tentatively. They are part of my process of wrestling with biblical statements regarding God's justice in dealing with nations. Each of the three major prophets includes a substantial section of such oracles.
Created with free version for non-commercial use.
Some minor prophets are nothing but an oracle against some other nation. I've always struggled a bit to see the relevance of such prophecies for us today. But in light of what's happening, they are beginning to make more sense to me. In praying about the situation, I found myself wondering if the following might be a true statement, or perhaps even a prophetic word for today. As you do to city ABC, so it will be done to your city. A principle of vengeance or retribution. Would that be fair? If nation X reduces the city or cities of nation Y to rubble in an act of aggression, should we expect that the same will or might happen to nation X?
Created with free version for non-commercial use.
For a historical example, think Nazi Germany. In May 1940, it bombed the city center of Rotterdam to force a quick surrender of the Netherlands army. Later that year, the Battle of Britain began, which included the extensive bombing of London and other British cities. So the wind reaped the whirlwind. At the end of the war, German cities lay in rubble on an unprecedented scale. Now, history is messy and does not show clear lines or follow laws or regularities in the way that nature does. But might there at least be a principle or tendency in this direction? And would this be justice? Interestingly, the prophet Nahum begins with invoking precisely such a principle of vengeance.
Created with free version for non-commercial use.
The Lord is a jealous and avenging God. The Lord is avenging and wrathful. The Lord takes vengeance on his adversaries and keeps wrath for his enemies. Nahum 1 verse 2. God's self-revelation in Exodus 34 is an enormously important statement in the Old Testament, and it is often quoted, and it is also part of Nahum's theological foundation. Quote, the Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, but who will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children and the children's children to the third and the fourth generation. Ironically, Nahum only quotes part of the original grace-heavy statement and thereby puts the emphasis.
Created with free version for non-commercial use.
The Lord is slow to anger and great in power, and the Lord will by no means clear the guilty. But it is worth noting that the tension between pardon and punishment is already present in the original revelation at Mount Horeb. How can God both forgive and not clear the guilty at the same time? Well, I guess seeing this apparent contradiction, we'll have to go back to the subject of the atonement next time. In Nahum 2 and 3, we get a detailed description of the final attack on Nineveh and its destruction, presumably based on a vision the prophet had. These two chapters also point out some of the reasons for the judgment. It is well deserved. Here is a small sample of Assyrian ruthlessness.
Created with free version for non-commercial use.
Assyrian soldiers with two captives that they are skinning alive. The judgment was well deserved indeed. But the theological foundation for it is laid in Nahum 1, and it is God's nature. And all of this is presented literally as good news, gospel, for Judah, which will no longer have to put up with Assyrian oppression. God is breaking this yoke. There is, of course, the question by what standard of justice nations could be held accountable in Old Testament times. For Israel, the standard was clear. The prophets denounced Israel for breaking the commandments of the law and for being unfaithful to God. This would not apply to other nations. Yahweh wasn't their God, and they were not under the Mosaic covenant. Amos makes clear that there are nevertheless standards of justice to which God
created with free version for non-commercial use.
And these standards have a lot to do with how the population of conquered cities and territories are treated. Just read Amos chapter 1 and 2. Now, Amos did not have any of our terminology for this, such as war crimes, crimes against humanity, Geneva Conventions, and genocide, but he upholds a remarkably similar set of criteria of justice. And with his take on international standards, Amos is more than 2.5 millennia ahead of his time. It appears, therefore, that there are principles of international justice in the Bible, literally international between nations. Violent actions against unarmed civilians, for instance, are wrong. And the prophets call on Yahweh to execute vengeance for such actions. Looking at Assyria and Babylon, it seems he did.
Created with free version for non-commercial use.
It appears the principle is not upheld. But this is Old Testament, so how does this change in the New Testament, and what about the inconsistent application? I see three crucial points to make. First, God is not after individual people themselves caught in the systems of evil. On the contrary, he would much rather save them from this evil. Even in the case of Nineveh, many of its inhabitants escaped. A quote from Nahum 3 verse 18, "Your people are scattered on the mountains with none to gather them." The empire was gone, not the people. Second, features of these ancient empires are compressed and transferred. They become a symbol, largely condensed into one name, Babylon, which is not really a city, but more a system of evil. And
created
well,
with
a
free
symbol.
Version for non-commercial use.
Even though at the time the New Testament was written, it was incorporated superlatively by one city empire, namely Rome, it is still clear that not all of Rome was all of Babylon. The symbol is much larger than any single city or empire. And then third, judgment is largely, even if not entirely, postponed. There is an eschatological day of reckoning. And sometimes, at least, judgment overtakes the transgressors even now, before that final day. Anyone reducing cities to rubble must count on the possibility that his city or cities will be likewise reduced, even though it's not a certainty. In fact, I sincerely hope it won't come to this. But it could. These prophecies don't tell us what will happen, but what can happen. And that one way or another, God
created with free version for non-commercial use
and do full justice. And I would not want to be on the wrong side of that justice. In the meantime, we hold on to that final line in the Lord's Prayer. Thine is the kingdom, that is, the governmental rule, and the power, not you know whose, and the glory. I've always felt a bit puzzled by the end of the prayer. Is it a ransom threesome thrown in as a feel-good conclusion? No, I'm beginning to see what a comforting confession this is. And it explains why the earlier line in the prayer, "Thy kingdom come," is not an empty wish. It already belongs to him, and he has the power to uphold it. So, Babylon, Nineveh, Nation X, City Y, Nahum is a book worth reading at such a time as this.
Created with free version for non-commercial use. Created with free version for non-commercial use.